Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dr. Kevin Mullis is the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, Doc. I want to talk about COVID and then move on to a very interesting topic about heart health in women. But first, let's talk about the vaccine for kids under five now. When do you think parents will be able to get their young children the new vaccine? Any idea?
Oh, yeah, Bob, absolutely. You know, they're going to discuss this on Wednesday. You know, the data has all been put in place for both Pfizer and Moderna. So the FDA will get together with this independent vaccine advisory committee and discuss those results. And they could approve as early as Wednesday. And then actually, they'll probably end up happening on Thursday or Friday. But then it's going to be the logistics of getting the vaccine out, you know, getting it distributed. So certainly we're looking at probably June 2024, you know, which is the timeline we thought before.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just be interesting to see how it's accepted, and it's going to be a little confusing again. I mean, you know, we've had so many confusing missteps with all the vaccines, but now Moderna is a two shots for these kids, and Pfizer is looking at three shots. So it's like, wait a second, why couldn't we have stabilize this and got it to a more standardized way, and we just missed it again.
And are most of the medical experts still recommending mix and match now instead of getting the same company's vaccine that you did earlier?
Well, for this, you're going to have to get the same. For these kids, you aren't going to be able to mix and match until you get the complete series. So certainly then the mixing and matching from that point going forward would be, what are we going to do for boosters for these kids?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing, Bob, is going to be, what is going to happen when we have the 5 to 11-year-olds, where we probably have a 40 to 50% vaccination rate? In other words, parents are hesitant with that age group. How hesitant are they going to be with this younger age group even more so? So
mm-hmm.
Not a huge number of infections in that age group, but certainly we look at it from a health field of, are these kids going to be the spreaders, right? They're the
right
ones that go to daycare, they get infections, they bring them home, and now grandma's sick. So certainly a concern for all of us going forward.
We were talking earlier about the fact that when you're traveling now and re-entering the U.S. from abroad, you don't need to be tested. And it's my read on this that this decision was not necessarily made in the best interest of our health, but rather to help with the international business. How do you view it?
No, I totally agree with you. You know, if you look at the best interests of our health, think about that. Where have these new strains come from? Well, they come from all over the world. Well, if we can test people before they travel, we have a greater opportunity to either slow that spread, minimize that spread, or stop that spread. Once that is gone, where we're not testing any international travel, you know, now if there's a hot strain that comes out in South Africa, by the time they've identified it, it will have already traveled around the world because we haven't had the opportunity to find out it's a new strain, just we know that it's positive. So look at what's going on right now, right? Omicron was big. BA2 was big. Well, hate to tell people, but BA4 and BA5 will be the predominant strains here in the next couple of weeks. So how do we stop the spread of these new variants? The only way we're going to do that is testing. And if we know what's going on locally in our communities, that's one thing. But when we're allowing international travel to come in, that is going to change the whole ballgame as far as the spread of this and how quickly a new variant may spread.
And I think it's also a good time to remind folks how long they have to wait after an infection, after they've had COVID, to get a shot. What is the period that you have to wait?
Yeah, so it's interesting. When we look at immunity, you know, we look at natural immunity, certainly those individuals who got COVID, those who got it initially, probably had a great chance of getting Omicron and now have another great chance of getting, BA4, BA5. So certainly we're going to have the natural immunity, but we also want to make sure we have that vaccine-based immunity as well. So we will usually tell people to wait about a month after they've had the infection because their immune system is still kicked in. Now they're back to completely normal. Now go ahead and get that booster. And people are still very hesitant to that, saying, wait, why do I need the booster if I've had the original shot plus some natural immunity? but we know that that immunity is going to wane, and we also know that the strength of the booster is much better than the natural immunity.
Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most at 9:51. Let's talk a little bit about heart disease in women. And recent studies have found that heart attacks and deaths from heart disease have been rising among women between the ages 35 and 54. Any idea why this is going on?
Yeah, Bob, it's actually fascinating. You know, we have this saying in medicine, when you hear hoofbeats, you think of horses, not zebras. In other words, you look for what you think may be the most common cause. And it's really time for us in medicine, as well as patients, to take two steps back here. You know, this study, what they looked at is they saw a bunch of things. They saw, one, that hypertension, so high blood pressure, something we really don't think about often in the 35-year-olds, is rampant in this country right now. Obesity, the problems that we're having, obesity, and the impact of COVID. And you say, well, what do you mean by the impact of COVID? Well, look at the smoking rates that have gone up dramatically. So when you take hypertension, obesity, and smoking and put them together, boy, we're going to see a big uptick on heart disease. But the other thing that's unusual about women is they don't come into the emergency room saying, I feel like an elephant sitting on my chest and they're sweaty. You know, the signs that we've been classically taught in the community to look for. Instead, they're coming in saying, you know what, I don't feel right. I feel a little fatigued. I'm kind of tired. I have a little abdominal pain. I'm nauseated. So, you know, the doctor's looking at, okay, what's causing her abdominal pain? We have to take two steps back and say, heart disease now is so rampant that it always has to be in what we call our differential diagnosis. We can't just go and say, oh, it must be your gallbladder, let's do that. We really need to do some of these tests that can essentially knock out the chance that it's a heart attack by doing an EKG and some troponin, some blood tests, and then really start to focus on this. But it is very concerning as we're going down and seeing increases in hypertension, increases in obesity, and increases in smoking rates going on right now.
I was really surprised to read that studies have shown that women are more likely than men to dismiss the warning signs of a heart attack, and sometimes they wait hours or longer to call 911 or go to a hospital. I always thought it's us, it's the men who always say, no, I'm fine, I'm okay, and the women are the ones who often get the men in to the doctor. Didn't that fact surprise you?
Absolutely, and you're absolutely right. You think about that. Women are the caregivers. They can't be sick, so they will often be dismissive, or they say, you know what, I felt like that in the past. This can't be anything serious, and they are. They're looking out for their kids. They're looking out for their husbands, and really, it's our job as physicians to get the word out to them to say, hey, when you have these symptoms, don't minimize them. Don't dismiss them. Don't think it's just, you know, nothing. Make sure that you get these checked, because how many heart attacks and deaths do we need to have before we do more education on heart disease in women? It's always been difficult because they've had silent heart attacks. And like you said, they don't come in because they don't think of anything. And by the time they do come in, it's pretty massive. And it's things that we really have to take two steps back and start thinking about again, is how we're going to address this from an education, because our treatment options are the same and they're very good as long as we can get them in quick.
Is it harder sometimes to diagnose these problems, these symptoms that women have, and connect them to a heart issue?
Absolutely. You know, one of the sayings in medicine is if you listen to a patient long enough, they will tell you what is wrong with them. In other words, doctors are very eager sometimes to start letting a patient talk, and we jump in and interrupt them when we should at least allow them to continue to talk and tell us more about their symptoms. So certainly, if we listen to these symptoms more and understand that not all abdominal pain is a gallbladder, you know, not all shortness of breath is allergies and wheezing, not all fatigue is depression. We have to really put these pieces together and say, boy, this it could be something else. And heart disease, unfortunately, even think about that. The age of 35, we would never, when I was in medical school, that would be so far down the list. And now we really need to make sure we're listening to the patients and putting these pictures and listening to each of the symptoms, putting them together, and understand that this illness is on a rise in this subset of population.
And we probably should point out that even though it's on the rise among younger women, it's still, for the most part, happening at an older age. What did I read? Women who had heart attacks have been on average 69, the average age of the men, 61. But I guess that's changing now, isn't it?
Well, it is. And we have to remember, when we talk about heart disease, it goes beyond heart attacks. Heart disease is still the number one killer for both men and women in this country, and it will continue to be, unfortunately. But what we really need to do is start looking at dietary stuff and stuff that is going to change not only having a heart attack, but heart disease. In other words, heart failure. So that the heart can't work as effectively, that you have problems with, you know, blood clots or pain in your legs because of your circulatory system, which is just an early snapshot of what's going on in your heart. So certainly we need to look at individuals now and be much more aggressive with their cholesterol management, their diet, and their exercise, and their refrain from smoking. Things that we wouldn't really think about in what I will call young females. And now we really do need to start focusing on that from a health prevention point of view.
And we mentioned blood pressure. Those home monitors, are they accurate? You trust those?
Yeah, I really do. And I think it's probably one of the best $40, $50 investments someone can make. You know, a lot of people will go get their blood pressure check once a year when they're at the doctor. And I always tell people, too, if you have a home monitoring system and you're not sure if it's good, you bring that with you to your appointment. So when we use the equipment that we have, which is much more sophisticated, we'll do that, and then we'll test yours at the exact same time, and we'll say, look, this is how close they are. That's great. And testing your blood pressure really is something that should be done, I would say, for most individuals. Anybody who's on blood pressure medicine, you should be testing at least 2 to 3 times a month. Anybody who else is healthy, certainly once a month is probably fine. Much better than just relying on the one time you go to the doctor's office. So certainly something that we can control. And when you get those numbers, it makes you stop and think, Bob, what now should I be doing? My blood pressure is up. I need to cut back on my sodium. I need to increase my exercise. I need to stop smoking. Mm-hmm. It's just another prompt for us as far as a data point that we can give patients as to what they can do to make their health better.
Such important information. Grateful, as always, to Dr. Kevin Most. And I guess the word of this week will be hydrate, won't it?
It will be hydrate with those 90s. I apologize for moving our time. So anybody who was looking for our conversation at 6:40, hopefully they stayed on to hear today.
We'll be back to normal next Monday. Thanks a lot, Dr. Most.
You got it. Take care.